Hello, if you just joined us, you're watching Stockwatch. Tackling your questions in studio this evening, Nick Kuntz from Bridge Fund Managers and Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss. Don't forget to send those questions through to us, SMS 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za, or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Gents, thanks for joining us on the desk. A green day. Toppy up a percent, Finney's almost 3%, Resi over 2%, Indy off 0.4, ZAR 14.52. Nick, nice to see some green. There hasn't been a lot of it recently.
Yeah, I mean, last week there was crying into my keyboard, and this morning I walked in and there was lots of green. And funny enough, it didn't start off that well.
Yeah.
You know, China was down again. It was a little bit of a soggy feeding. US futures were down. But the news broke, IBM, a bit of M&A takeover with Red Hat. And all of a sudden, Europe got a bit of a bid as well. We got going as well. Our banks got going. We finished a little bit off the highs, but still decent. You know, nice to see. And I think a little bit of window dressing too coming up to month end as well.
Yeah, no, a Santa rally, please, a Santa rally. Mm. I don't believe in Santa Claus, but I want his rally. Indy was down 0.4, Gary. That was NASPAS. Another 3% below 2,500. My feed is full of people asking, how low can it go? Should I buy? Should I sell? I mean, Tencent is, before we came on, you pointed out, Tencent had been $400, now it's $250. We get the story then. Chinese government clamping down on games, no new games coming. I mean, this will change.
I don't know what to say. At the moment, yeah, it should change. I mean, you know, you're seeing the pressure come through, you know. I think, yeah, partly because of the regulation around obviously Chinese gaming, that kind of was one of the triggers that started the slide in Tencent, which has obviously fed into the slide in NASPAS as well. But, you know, if you look at the Tencent chart, it's just been sort of steady downward traffic for most of the year. It's been trading kind of a range. The top end of that range a little while ago was about 320 Hong Kong dollars, but it never got anywhere close to recovering to the top of the range. And it's, you know, ever since NASPAS broke that 3,000 sort of key support level, it's just been one way traffic down. I think it looked like the market was defending, you know, 2,500. That obviously broke today, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens tomorrow. As Nick was saying, I mean, we had, you know, a little bit of positivity around tech stocks in the US on the back of the IBM deal, and you know, we've got some big names reporting this week in the US as well. We've got Facebook, we've got Apple as
Apple,
well.
So yeah,
potentially that can help the tech sector in the US catch a bit, and maybe by extension the Chinese tech sector. But at this stage, it's very, very difficult. I mean, you still kind of do some of the parts valuation. You look at the discount to, you know, that keeps on widening if you do in some of the parts. So, you know, most sell side analysts still got their targets, you know, well above 4,000.
I mean, at some point, that rump, which we have basically valued at zero, we're going to start getting to that.
Honestly, for me, it looks like it is at these levels, it should be a buy. You should be piling into NASPAS at these levels within reason. Yeah, I take another point Nick was making before the show, which is you don't put, you know, a massive chunk of your portfolio in NASPAS just because it's got a big weighting in the index. That doesn't make sense as a retail investor, but absolutely, I think NASPAS now, after, you know, we were thinking at around 4,000 it was too expensive. I mean, I've been on the show saying that, I mean, we sold out in January, you know, almost entirely from our NASPAS exposure, and we've been re-entering now kind of below 3,000. But, you know, where does the downside stop? It's an impossible question to answer. I wish I could answer it, but what I can say is that it's looking cheaper than it has in a long time. And yeah, for me, this becomes a buy because this looks temporary. I saw there was a wonderful article out just showing that the projected growth rates of the various economies across the globe out to 2022. And you can see that still the majority of economic growth that's going to come through for the global economy is going to come from China. So having exposure to a Chinese market, and Tencent is one of the ways that you get exposure, but there are plenty of other stocks. I mean, we've got Ping An reporting now as well. There's plenty of other ways of getting exposure to the Chinese market. But the Chinese market has been decimated, partly on the back of trade wars, partly on the back of, you know, just the rise in tensions, partly on the back of it being a very retail-driven market as well. And when retail markets slide, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, and they slide further than they perhaps should. And I just get the sense that, you know, if you're patient and you buying into the Chinese economy at these levels and into Chinese sort of large cap stocks, which I, again, we were also discussing before the show. Tencent, you know, does seem to have the backing of Chinese authorities. The problems in China at the moment have also been largely, you know, self-imposed by the PBOC, which is, you've been tightening regulatory controls around the Chinese economy. So, you know, part of the slide is a regulatory issue. It's the clampdown on gaming. This is not a slowdown in the Chinese economy that's spooking people around this market. It's self-inflicted. So I think that can also very easily be reversed. We've already kind of had the hints from the Chinese authorities of stimulus moving back into the market. So for me, I don't know where the bottom is, but I definitely think it's a buy.
At
2.4, this is a buy for me.
Yeah, I mean, I thought 3 was the bottom. Turns out it wasn't. I thought 2.5. Turns out it wasn't. But to Gary's point, I mean, I don't know how low it's going, but 2.4 odd has to be a decent price. I mean, 10 cents, yeah, not going to disappear.
Very much. And if it, obviously at the moment you've got the everything being driven out of China. You know, it's whatever 10 cent does, Naspers is doing on the back of it for obvious reasons. But at some point as well, Naspers also been quite vocal of recent wanting to. They understand that they can't have too much weighting. They understand that they need to, at some point, realize value for shareholders. Mm-hmm. And Van Dijk has been very vocal about it. So they're going to come up with other stuff too. I mean, they had an investment into some startup gaming on Friday. They're looking at diversifying. So they're going to carry on doing what they're doing. So as much as it's all about Tencent, it doesn't necessarily have to be.
It doesn't. I mean, they had their Flipkart stake, which they sold to Walmart.
Yeah.
That netted them a couple
big
of
chunk.
Billion.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think you'll see them starting to do more and more stuff like this, Simon. They're going to look at basically realizing they need to sort of get the value of that rump back up.
Let's go to some of the updates coming out today. MTN quarterly update, not bad. Nigeria, Ghana looking good. Market kind of liked it. They've still got the $10 odd billion of fines lurking around Nigeria, but not a bad number from MTN.
Not a bad number at all, and I think the market was a little bit, wasn't as bad as people, I think people were expecting worse.
Yeah.
And I think that's what the market took a little bit of comfort from as well. Also, a little, I mean, it was only a trading update, so not too much clarity on their listing and what they want to list in Nigeria when they do.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to be like at the moment that the fight over taxes and the Nigerian government doesn't seem to be getting any worse, which I think the market took a bit of comfort from.
MTN, is it a stock in your portfolios, model portfolios?
No, we haven't had MTN for a long time. We haven't actually had telcos, just because we kind of figure that they're becoming utilities and the super normal profits that you're going to generate aren't going to really exist. But at the same time, I mean, there's been vigorous debate on our desk about putting MTN back in just at current levels, because absolutely the overhang on the stock is mm-hmm. is the potential issues in Nigeria, and again regulatory issues, regulators stepping in, but the update today, operationally MTN, you know, very very solid. You know, South Africa was a little bit soft, but I think what also helped encourage the market a little bit there, that their average revenue per user, so the ARPU number, was a little bit ahead of expectations. So I mean they're sitting at about it's just above 98 rand a user, which is fairly decent. And I mean, data's still growing, you know, reasonably well. And I mean, you know, that's kind of where the telcos also, you know, pointing the future growth potential is in the data market. So I think, you know, group data revenue is up, I think it was over 23%.
Yeah.
So still growing as well. But again, you know, it's difficult to kind of predict how much data we're going to require. You know, sure, we move to 4K TVs, we need more data. I mean, at what point do we have like a fully immersive experience?
Can't wait.
And then, I mean, how thick are fiber optics going to be? I don't know. Like, at what point, you know, does that kind of like unlimited need for data that we seem to be showing now, you know, start to
stay? That's the utility story ultimately.
And that's where we're trying to say, you know, a lot is baked into some of these prices. And you know, we're still kind of expecting growth, and there's all the idea of maybe you can partner with content networks, maybe you can move into financial services. But it's an industry that is, you know, very ripe for disruption. I hate using that word, but it is. It's an industry that's changing as well. So it kind of depends whether they're going to almost stay as the very much just the network operators, or going to branch into other things. And I think, you know, maybe telco companies that are looking at other avenues are a little bit more interesting. But MTN is a well-established emerging market player. So if you are optimistic that in future emerging markets could turn around, this is in very aggressive markets in Nigeria, Iran, Ghana, Africa. If you believe in the African growth story, this is probably a stock you want to own, and you're getting in at very good prices, so long as the Nigerian issue doesn't.
Yeah, and one of certainly one of the most recognizable brands on the continent as well. Very, very well recognized.
Yeah, no, well recognized. Famous brands who are a well recognized brand. If we can remove the indigestion in the UK, which we can't, but let's pretend we can. The numbers, considering the environment out there and taken in with the ShopRite update this morning as well, they weren't bad. Of course, the UK just throws everything out the window.
They weren't bad, but what sounds like, because it's gone into sort of the ring fence, whatever they called it, voluntary, whatever it was, means there's no buyers for that company, and they really need to bin it. I mean, they've already taken impairments of, 800 million. They've got another 45 for the last 6 months. I mean, I saw a tweet today, someone saying there's 400 similar gourmet burger equivalent places completely oversaturated in the United Kingdom, 400. So, I mean, they can never sell this business. And I think, I don't know what they're going to do there, but if you had to strip it out, it actually wasn't bad. But the problem is they stuck with it.
Yeah.
But if I have to read another story about another South African company venturing into either the UK or Australia.
Venturing anywhere.
Run a mile.
You cross that Limpopo, you're short. I mean, it's the best. I mean, that's just the trading 101 these days.
Yes.
Famous brands, I mean, not bad. But, I mean, I'm not sure that anyone wants, I mean, not good enough to rush out and buy.
Yeah, probably not. As Nick said, you can't kind of separate that GBK exposure. And yeah, I was shocked. I mean, I looked at it, I kind of looked at the trading update came out, market opened, kind of looked at it. Why is Famous Brands not trading? Like, what's going on? It was no trade.
No,
and eventually 973 shares, I think, traded. I was like, is anyone even interested in this company anymore? It's crazy.
And it used to be like the market darling.
But it was such a market darling. And now it's just, again, no interest whatsoever. I mean, so scary.
They've got great brands. Well-run, just in this environment. No
ashes. Like, I mean, it's a good...
Yeah.
Good franchise. And I mean, are we worried about foreign competition? I mean, yeah, sure, Burger King's here. Like, I mean, is that really going to eat its lunch? I don't know.
I think,
as Nick says, like, I mean, you know, misadventure overseas, but, you know, to consolidate in a local market that, you know, potentially gets better, maybe, you know, again, it could be a buy if you can look through those numbers, if you're a slightly longer term hold. I mean, we don't hold it, but now suddenly we're looking at it and going, there's liquidity concerns around the stock, which is just crazy.
But I mean, 2 weeks ago, I was in Umhlanga, and there's a strip of, and it's pretty much, I think, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 of those were their signature restaurants. And they're quality. They're thick operations. The food is great. The pricing is as expected for the brands. But and they were moderately busy, you know, 20 people a night type of thing. But they're in this economy, perhaps not. So then let's go to Aspen. Question coming through. I bought at 174. Nick, should I be selling? Should I be buying? Should I be holding?
I don't know if I'd be panicking just yet. I mean, we were big fans of the stock until they disappointed with their last earnings. But I wouldn't panic just yet. I mean, they're generating close to, I think, 1 billion rand a month in profits, pure profits. It does feel like it's been a bit heavy. It does feel like there might have been some forced sellers. We know for a fact a lot of the local CFD houses have been upping their margin, which has contributed to the selling as well. But, you know, for me, the two founders buying, you know, what, 110 million rands worth of stock. I mean, you read about, I'm not going to name any companies, but recently there were a couple of directors buying shares on a, you know, I know for a fact they're billionaires and they're buying like 110,000 rands worth of stock. And it doesn't really fill you with much confidence. But I mean, 100 million rand with the stock,
it's
Eldridge and Saad buying, which is such a vote of confidence in your company and putting money where their mouth is. I mean, the fact that they do, not they always get it right. I mean, we know Steinhoff directors were buying all the way down, but I do think it's a very different business and generating decent profits. And I think, would I sell it? Maybe bought them at 75? No, not yet.
No. Gary, we've got a minute before break. Aspen?
Yeah, again, I also wouldn't sell it. I mean, you listen to Stephen Saad speak. I mean, he just reinforces that thing. My interests are directly aligned with shareholder interests. And I mean, it's one of the reasons that it was always a great stock. I think part of the reason is that it was a market darling. It's one of the fallen angels.
But isn't it just reweighting a bit as well?
Perhaps. But again, you look at it and you know, panic selling affects, you know, retail market pushes prices down when they fall. It exacerbates prices. And this is the time that institutions come in and they get great deals. And the smart money delists things like Clover. I mean, this is the time where you should be buying. But yeah, I can tell you to go buy Aspen. I've been telling everyone to buy Aspen forever. You're not going to listen to me. But I honestly believe you look 5-10 years out, Aspen is still a great business. And it's the same as Kumba. We looked at Kumba. I was like, buy Kumba 200, you know, as it slid all the way to 30, because we were kind of looking at the underlying business saying this is a great business. But, you know, once you kind of get that pessimism and the negative sentiment towards the stock, it'll slide all the way down. At 30, everyone's going, it's a sell. You got to dump this thing. And then, you know, a couple of months later, paid a dividend the same size as the share price. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I really think that the pessimism is overdone on Aspen. And from here, yeah, even 175, I think that's a great price. I think just you could have got a little bit cheaper. Maybe you can get a little bit more, but...
You could have got it 440, and in 5 years, you could brag to your friends about your 175, perhaps. Time for a quick break. Keep sending through your questions via SMS 41392. Email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za. Welcome back. Let's take a quick look at how international markets are performing. Across in the US, well, we're green on the S&P up just over 0.5%. The Dow up 0.33%, but the tech-heavy Nasdaq off marginally, but red for the day. And across in Europe was green across the board. The FTSE out of London up 1.25%. CAC around 40 out of Paris up almost 0.5%. And the DAX, perhaps on the back of Angela Merkel stepping down in a couple of years, up 1.2%. Gents, last update we had coming through today, ShopRite. They've got problems, some of them of their own making, as they admit with their DC distribution center in Gauteng. They've also got, was it 10 or 11,000 products cheaper than they were a year ago. A lot going wrong there. Not all of it their own fault. Just, you know, things beyond their control.
Yeah, and I actually thought that the update today was actually quite negative. And look, there is another case where, as much as people say there's food inflation, there's obviously no food inflation. Yeah. And they alluded to that today as well. I mean, those numbers were below revenue. I mean, revenue growth of 0.4% year on year, and the stock's trading on, you know, 15-20 PE. It's not what you want to hear. So I'll be very cautious.
Even at 180, you're not liking.
I'd be cautious.
Yeah. So it's interesting. It does. It felt like a negative update that had great positive spin in it. You know, we've managed to contain cost inflation. Thank us, customers. But isn't the sales announcement meant to be for shareholders,
not for customers?
Like, we're happy that the customers are getting a great deal, but at the same time, we understand that your costs are going to creep. And we've got higher petrol prices. We've got, you know, the costs are going to be more expensive going forward. And all this update is telling me is that it's not that you're doing it out of the goodness of your heart, or I hope you aren't as a shareholder, but the South African consumer is now in a place where you cannot push through price increases at this stage. And that, for me, is concerning. It's concerning not just for ShopRite, but it's concerning for retail in general.
I think it was non-SA revenue as well, also down like 8.5% as well. So it's just generally, it's exactly what Gary was saying. Like they managed to put quite a positive spin on what I thought was quite a disappointing update.
That was largely Zambia and Angola as well, just the currency depreciation, translation. But again, and then ShopRite as well, if you look at the supply chain management as well, ShopRite was really the leader of all the retailers. I mean, you kind of had the feeling that, I mean, our retail analyst at the time was saying, you know, you compare Pick and Pay to ShopRite, and ShopRite is 20, 25 years ahead in technology than Pick and Pay. Pick and Pay is still sitting there with kind of, you know, little mini warehouses in their retail space. Having to pack it at the back and then put it onto the shelves, where, you know, ShopRite just was so slick and so sleeveless. Now, part of this was because of a 6-week strike as well. At the Joburg DC, but it's sad to see that such a slick operation is also being held back by the supply chain management. So,
rough numbers there. What about the JSE itself? The share down 25% year to date. The trick, I mean, volumes are stuck at sort of high teen billions, and, you know, 15, 16, 18, occasionally 20, until that starts to change. I mean, they're in a tough space.
Well, it's exact reflection of where we are in the marketplace, exactly where we are. I mean, the share was $200, look where it is now. But the volumes are down significantly, and a lot of people I speak to in the broker fraternity are saying the same. It's been, volumes are very, very thin and very low.
And volumes is their game.
Volumes is their game, market data is also their game, but I think the problem is the JSE kind of, Yeah, as much as, you know, in the last couple of years they've come out and said, you know, we're not a monopoly. We understand that this is a competitive market. They've behaved like a monopoly for a long time.
And I think what plus years.
and what's happened now is, I mean, you're seeing, you know, the entry of new exchanges, which is, it's not a retail market, but they are, you know, they're starting to attract reasonable size listings, which is great, because it does promote kind of competition in the local market, will drive down costs. But from an investor point of view, there's just, you know, so much appetite for offshore investment at this stage that I think a lot of the traders, a lot of the, which is largely what drives the volume as well, and a lot of the kind of, I suppose, longer term money as well, it has now moved out and has gone into exchanges across the globe. And you know, unfortunately, it's something that's happening. I mean, you know, South Africa is part of a global economy.
Yeah, it's not Zorex, it's DAX and FTSE.
And NASDAQ and NYSE, and that's the problem. And South African investors have demanded access. And the local, I think the local brokers and the local market has been very quick and very good to respond to that requirement.
And I mean, for the average person in South Africa, I mean, there's not even exchange controls, really. I mean, 10 million per person. Yeah. I mean, you can actually have a global portfolio for the average person.
That's
quite
it. And I mean, even if you're taking more than 10 million, I mean, a SOB clearance doesn't take very long to get if you are taking out more than your 10 million in a year anyway. So, very easy to do, and plenty, and as well, plenty of proxy products as well, where you don't need to use your offshore exchange allowance, but you are still able to get exposure to those markets. And just with the spread of instruments expanding as it has, JSC fighting for its relevance.
The king just got a pain in the back of her head when you said that. What about Hammerson? He has a stock. You could buy it in London. You can buy it locally on the JSE. Obviously, that currency move is significant. Hammerson attractive to you? Exposure into the UK?
Again, I think there's so many ways of getting exposure into the UK property market, and it's been under so much pressure. And I think just with the concerns around Brexit at the moment, yeah, until we get to kind of that deadline in March next year, I think it's going to remain. I mean, there's all sorts of, you know, I mean, you can look at Capco. I still think Capco is a fantastic entry into the UK. I think a lot of these UK property stocks are very underpriced, but at the same time, we're going to need to see a resolution on Brexit before we see the catalyst for a re-rating. And until then, I think you're going to be sitting with very, very subdued share price performance.
Yeah, and Brexit, well, technically March, but yeah, I wouldn't put too many pounds on that happening.
There is that is such a mess. But I actually also think that a lot of traders have got like Brexit fatigue.
Yes.
I mean, we used to hear about when it was back with Greece. You know, it was like, oh, really? I'm almost worried about Greece. Yeah. Now it's like every time I look and there's another Brexit story, and especially now on a Monday morning, because you get all the political talk shows in the UK on the Sunday, so you get the feed through today of who was on what today's show talking about Brexit again. I think people are actually so over it now. But they're far from resolved. This is not a political show, but I'm telling you now, they are nowhere near getting that exit strategy right. And if there's no smooth deal, I mean, they're going to hit a proper wall if they're not careful. And they're nowhere near it. They can't even agree amongst themselves.
There's talk of another referendum, which I didn't think was going to happen.
Hey, that was my bet on the day. I've got a bet running that there will be a second referendum on the final deal, and we'll go with that. We need to go to stock picks before we do. Questions coming around Metrofile. I was a huge fan of it. The question is, am I still buying? No, because if I buy anymore, I get a seat on the board, and I don't need to do boards. Nick, is Metrofile a stock on your list?
Definitely. Also like it, yeah.
Yeah, it's quite a little company. Being hit hard, and I'm worried.
Being hit hard,
Sandvest is going to delist it.
Well, it depends what price they delisted it, I guess. You know, everything's got its price. Minorities get taken out, and I don't know what sort of premium they are these days, but it certainly seems to be the trend of talking about Ms. Newton King getting a sore neck again. Well, if there's more delistings happening, maybe. But at Metrofile, I think it's a great little company, very well run business.
Gary?
Yeah, I haven't looked at Metrofile in a long time. I mean, we used to hold it, but again, it was kind of liquidity problems for us.
Yeah, it's not a very liquid stock.
It wasn't. And kind of on the face of it, like, I mean, and I probably haven't looked at it in 2 years probably. Okay. So rather my comment.
So let's go to some stock picks. Nick, we're talking about the down and outs. Coronation, sub 50. This is a stock that once was 120. I was actually looking at it on the weekend. Dividend yield is 10.
Yeah.
I mean, if it falls 20%, that's 8. That's a lot of money to be paid to hold a stock.
Yeah, look, that a trading update, and I think another one, a bit like an MTN, where it wasn't quite as bad as people thought. You know, we know there's been redemptions. We know they've got a couple of things wrong. You know, they were heavily exposed. There's no secret what we know. They had a big exposure to Aspen. They had a big exposure to Starnoff. We all know the story. They've had redemptions, I think it was 2.2% down from last time. So it wasn't as bad as people thought. But I think you get some comfort in the fact that they still have over 500 billion rand of assets under management, which are charging a fee on. Their dividend, as you rightly pointed out, at these current levels, paying close to 10%. So I think just, and it's a bit of a proxy on the market. You know, we've been so hammered, and the stock's been in line with, as you'd expect, with the general marketplace, that for me, I always treat it a bit like an upside call. But I think it's worth a punt at these levels.
Okay, market starts to move, Coronation follows. They start to do some performance, they can really start pumping. You're going with the Euro Stoxx 50, but not quite. So Euro Stoxx 50 is obviously the 50 biggest companies in Europe, dominated by Germany, France, I think. And then we've got the local ETF from Signia, and then occasionally Investec come and wrap that in a blanket and sell it to you, but now you've got your own...
Yeah, so we've created our own blanket to wrap it in. So
blanket's the wrong word. Don't use it just because I did.
I like it. It's a blanket, and it's a safety. It's a comfort blanket, exactly, that we're going to wrap it in. So it's a structured product that we've created. It's backed into an A-rated bank overseas, and essentially what it's going to give you is exposure to the Euro Stoxx. It is a fully offshore product, so you have to use your offshore allowance to get exposure to it. The blanket that we're wrapping it in does move your CITES to South Africa, so you have none of the kind of problems that you would have otherwise from a tax point of view. But essentially what it's going to give you is capital protection. It's not 100%. We're giving 40% capital protection on the way down, but that's at maturity as well. So it's not a barrier where you go down.
Barrier out. Okay.
42, suddenly you're out. It's only at the end of a five-year term. If you hit 39%, you get 100% of your capital back. The reason that we've figured that that's a better protective strategy, because if the market ends, if the Euro Stoxx ends from here, 5 years' time, 60% down, you know, a lot of these structured products, which are credit products as well, probably those guarantees are not going to exist because the banks guaranteeing them are not going to exist.
We've got bigger problems.
Why pay for protection that we're not going to use anyway? And for that, we get digital upside. So that means if the Euro Stoxx in 5 years is 0.01% positive, we'll give you a 55% return automatically in US dollars, even though that index is priced in euros. So a weakening euro will feed into that and actually be more beneficial for you. Above that 55% level, it's not a cap. It's you get full Euro Stoxx performance on the way up, and you get linear performance on the way up. So you kind of outperform in a flat to sideways market, and you kind of, what you're doing is you're taking your risk on the two ends of the bell curve and you're squeezing it towards the middle. The drawback is that you obviously, with most of these products, you don't get dividends.
Okay, that was the quickest 90-second blanking description. You want more? Find Gary. Thanks to our guests, Nick Kunz from Bridge Fund Managers, going with Coronation, Gary Boyson. They've got a Euro Stoxx 50 wrapper product. Go hunt them out, get more details on that. More of your stock related questions tomorrow with Siki. Till then, have a good evening. So let's go to some stock picks. Nick, to be talking about the down and outs. Coronation, sub 50. This is a stock that once was 120. I was actually looking at it on the weekend. Dividend yield is 10.
Yeah.
I mean, if it falls 20%, that's 8. That's a lot of money to be paid to hold a stock.
Yeah, look, that a trading update, and I think another one a bit like an MTN, where it wasn't quite as bad as people thought. You know, we know there's been redemptions. We know they've got a couple of things wrong. You know, they were heavily exposed. There's no secret what we know. They had a big exposure to Aspen. They had a big exposure to Starnoff. We all know the story. They've had redemptions, I think it was 2.2% down from last time. So it wasn't as bad as people thought. But I think you get some comfort in the fact that they still have over 500 billion rand of assets under management, which are charging a fee on. Their dividend, as you rightly pointed out, at these current levels, paying close to 10%. So I think just, and it's a bit of a proxy on the market. You know, we've been so hammered, and the stock's been in line with, as you'd expect, with the general marketplace, that for me, I always treat it a bit like an upside call. But I think it's worth a punt at these levels.
Okay, market starts to move, Coronation follows. They start to do some performance, they can really start pumping. You're going with the Euro Stoxx 50, but not quite. So Euro Stoxx 50 is obviously the 50 biggest companies in Europe, dominated by Germany, France, I think. And then we've got the local ETF from Signia, and then then occasionally Investec come and wrap that in a blanket and sell it to you, but now you've got your own...
Yeah, so we've created our own blanket to wrap it in. So
blanket's the wrong word. Don't use it just because I did.
I like it. It's a blanket, and it's a safety. It's a comfort blanket, exactly, that we're going to wrap it in. So it's a structured product that we've created. It's backed into an A-rated bank overseas, and essentially what it's going to give you is exposure to the euro stocks. It is a fully offshore product, so you have to use your offshore allowance to get exposure to it. The blanket that we're wrapping it in does move your situs to South Africa, so you have none of the kind of problems that you would have otherwise from a tax point of view. But essentially what it's going to give you is capital protection. It's not 100%. We're giving 40% capital protection on the way down, but that's at maturity as well. So it's not a barrier where you go down.
Barrier out. Okay.
42, suddenly you're out. It's only at the end of a five-year term. If you hit 39%, you get 100% of your capital back. The reason that we've figured that that's a better protective strategy, because if the market ends, if the euro stock ends from here, 5 years' time, 60% down, you know, a lot of these structured products, which are credit products as well, probably those guarantees are not going to exist because the banks guaranteeing them are not going to exist.
We've got bigger problems.
Why pay for protection that we're not going to use anyway? And for that, we get digital upside. So that means if the euro stocks in 5 years is 0.01% positive, we'll give you a 55% return automatically in US dollars, even though that index is priced in euros. So a weakening euro will feed into that and actually be more beneficial for you. Above that 55% level, it's not a cap. It's you get full euro stocks performance on the way up, and you get linear performance on the way up. So you kind of outperform in a flat to sideways market, and you kind of, what you're doing is you're taking your risk on the two ends of the bell curve and you're squeezing it towards the middle. The drawback is that you obviously, with most of these products, you don't get dividends.
Okay, that was the quickest 90-second blanking description. You want more? Find Gary. Thanks to our guests, Nick Kunz from Bridge Fund Managers, going with Coronation, Gary Boyson. They've got a Eurostoxx 50 wrapper product. Go hunt them out, get more details on that. More of your stock related questions tomorrow with Siki. Till then, have a good evening.